Hello, everyone. It's a day after I offered the first portion of this month's response. So it's around 2 o'clock in the morning on May 2nd, 2014. And it felt appropriate to add something to the to this month's response, because in the first portion of this response I really focused very intently on the totally unexplainable happening of the moment and really kind of backed people into a corner with the question, what actually is? It was also pointing out that all of this simply presents itself. And with this kind of intense exploration, with these kinds of intense considerations, often people can make more out of it than it is. So they begin to get concerned about certain issues. So they might, because I was putting so much emphasis on the totally unexplainable happening, you know, what's there when there is no thinking? I mean, it's a natural response in many so-called individuals to start protesting, to say, but we have to think. We have to think. We can't live without thinking. Or when I put so much emphasis on the fact that whatever this is, whatever the happening of this moment is, it's presenting itself, and that means it's presenting everything that we think we are as well. It's just happening. People start focusing on the notion that I'm saying there's no control. And they start focusing on that idea, which is their particular interpretation of what I'm saying. And that starts feeling a bit bleak. So it felt appropriate to offer this supplement to that, the first portion of this month's offering. And it also works nicely into addressing a concern that many people have, a question that many people have. If we really do acknowledge this, like, what are we going to do with it? Like, what happens after we acknowledge this? Perhaps we will realize that we don't really have to be concerned about that kind of question. Because if there really is an acknowledgement that whatever this is, it's just presenting itself, it's just this happening, then we can realize that there's never any need to really be concerned about what to do with it. Because everything that we apparently are is simply part of the expression, a portion of the expression, or it is this totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. Now, even though there can be an acknowledgement that life has no particular form, because very easily we can acknowledge that everything that we know of is changing, so that no particular thing has any ultimate form. Whatever it seems to be now, it's changing. It may be changing very slowly, or it may be changing very quickly, but it is changing. That's our actual general experience of life. So the thoughts and the moods, they shift quite quickly. Our bodies shift a little more slowly. The weather shifts a little, sometimes it's shifting slowly, sometimes it's shifting quickly. The mountains shift even more slowly. The galaxy shifts even more slowly. But basically, no matter who's examining these things or considering these things, everything is a moving, shifting, dancing event that has no particular form. Even though that kind of fact can be acknowledged, on a day-to-day basis, life still appears to be a form. And so it is that they often compare this kind of awakening process, this kind of realization, to the realization of a mirage. They often will point out that the apparent forms in existence are a mirage. Now, that doesn't mean nothing exists. In the same way that on a hot day, if we see a mirage, it looks like water, and we might believe that it's water if we're seeing it for the first time. But if we actively investigate that situation of a mirage, we discover that there really isn't any water there. However, it still looks like there's water there. And so after we've investigated it, even though we see what looks to be water, we know with absolute certainty that it's not. And so it is that if we begin to examine our usual assumptions about existence, the assumption that life has form, we realize that it ultimately doesn't have any particular form because everything is changing. And yet it still looks like it has form. If we examine the assumption that we know what everything is, very quickly we can realize that as a baby, we didn't know what any of this is, what this pulsing, vibrant happening of this moment actually is. We don't really know what it is as an infant. And that if we examine what we usually say it is, we'll realize that what we're saying is just something, it's just sounds we were taught to bark, that they don't really tell us what this is. And yet, on a day-to-day basis, we walk around looking at apparent forms and giving them names. So it, even when we realize that we don't know what it is and it has no particular form, on a day-to-day basis, it will still seem as though we're somebody going through life, somebody moving through a world of things, a world of forms, that we ourselves are a particular thing in a particular form, and that we somehow know what it is. And even though we may realize that it's not something we can call human life or human suffering, it's not something that we can truly describe as a problem that needs to be fixed. It's not something that we can truly describe by saying that parts of it are wrong. On a day-to-day basis, those kinds of terms will come up, that kind of phrasing will come up. Even if we've had this realization that none of this can be understood, it's simply presenting itself, there is just this, like all that ever exists is this vibrant, pulsing, illuminating, whatever. You know, these words just point to the feeling that something's happening right now, but there actually ultimately isn't any way of saying what this is. Even if we've had a very profound realization of this, even if in any moment, if we ask ourselves what actually is, and immediately it becomes obvious that there's just this unexplainable happening of the moment presenting itself, on a day-to-day basis, what we call thoughts and what we call the usual assumptions about existence, those will continue to present themselves, even though there's no way of saying what that actually is. And the usual difficulties, what we call difficulties, will present themselves. The pains of life, the confusions, those situations that seem to be so unfair will still present themselves. So if we look around at this world of apparent forms, we can easily acknowledge that apple trees grow up and produce apples without having a focus on thought. They don't have to be concerned about planning their lives. We can acknowledge that all the flowers in the world simply grow up and blossom. They unfold to their maximum potential without having to do any planning. Now, yeah, it's true that I don't know absolutely that a plant isn't sitting there asking itself what it wants to be in 10 years' time, but I really do have the strongest impression that it's not doing that. And I think you can also agree with that, that we don't have the impression that a plant is setting forth its 10-year plan of development. And yet, it expresses itself beautifully. It just happens. And it unfolds to its maximum potential. Again, it's simply the dance of this totally unexplainable happening expressing itself the way it expresses itself. It's also the case that the seasons change without having to focus on thinking. We don't even have the impression that summer thinks or that winter thinks. All of this simply expresses itself naturally. It's inherent in the nature of whatever this is, that it expresses itself this way. We also don't have the feeling that a squirrel is having to focus on some complex philosophical treatise in order to take care of itself. It doesn't have to understand the absolute meaning of existence or to search for some motivation in order to take care of itself. It all simply happens. It's just the dance of this vibrant, unexplainable happening that we would call this happening of now. In fact, if we examine pretty much every other portion of existence other than what we would call human beings, we'll realize that all of it is taking place without the benefit of thinking. We don't have the impression that a beetle is focused on complex thought. In fact, we would say that the animals in nature are simply following their instinct. Everything is being moved by the forces of nature, the power of nature. So we acknowledge very easily that there is some power inherent or some innate intelligence inherent in this event that we call the universe or existence. In every aspect of this great, wondrous happening that we call existence or we call the universe, we acknowledge that all of that has some, we could say, a kind of inherent intelligence, an innate intelligence, a current, some power that simply is expressing all of this. And so in the acknowledgement that we also are part of the expression, we're acknowledging that this innate intelligence exists within us too. And we don't really have to be concerned on a day-to-day basis about what we're going to do. Because in fact, we're simply moving and shifting and dancing in the same way that the apple tree apples, the flowers bloom, the seasons shift, and all of the other aspects of this great mysterious dance of existence is expressing itself. It simply takes care of itself. Now, in a consideration of this, some people will start to manufacture some notion that this is an entirely bleak and hopeless situation. Oh, you know, they focus on the notion of, I don't have any control. But this investigation, this consideration, is not focusing on the idea that I have no control. It's focusing on the fact that there is this great, wondrous, and magical dance of appearances. We don't really know what it is. It doesn't actually have a form. No one is making it happen, but here it is. It's just happening. There's some kind of magical quality to it. And whatever this is, it's not going to express itself in some kind of downward spiral into only negative things. It's been expressing itself all along. And what does it express? It expresses both wonderful things and terrible things. But it's never a situation of it being entirely terrible and negative. Even if you wanted it to be entirely terrible and negative, it wouldn't be that. Even if you wanted to simply be miserable all the time, if you're really acknowledging what's going on, you're not miserable all the time. There are moments of pleasure. There are apparent things that you enjoy, that you love, that you appreciate. Moments of entertainment. So ultimately, this is not a bleak situation. It's an intriguing situation. It's a rich display of something that can't be understood in any way whatsoever. And in our false descriptions of it, even in our false descriptions of it, it's good and bad. It's clear and confused. It's happy and sad. So it's not some situation of bleakness and hopelessness. Now, since we can't get rid of the appearance of form, or the various thoughts, the apparent thoughts that rise up spontaneously, the various descriptions, apparent descriptions that rise up in the, what we might call just the day-to-day functioning of whatever this is, in that world of description and appearance of form, what this totally unexplainable happening, what this happening expresses in that world of apparent form, in the realms of apparent description, is a voyage of discovery. A journey of exploration. So even though it's not truly a person going through a life, even though we can't truly say what this actually is, on a day-to-day basis, it will appear, it will still appear to be the journey of a person through life, in the same way that even though we know a mirage is not water, it still looks like water. So on a day-to-day basis, we still seem to be a person moving through a world, experiencing the joys and agonies of a life. And it's true that it's all simply presenting itself so that ultimately we don't have absolute control over this. But that's not the realization that we don't have absolute control over this, that doesn't exist just in a non-dual sensibility. Ask anybody whether they feel they have absolute control over life, and they'll all say no. So with this non-dual realization, we can realize that ultimately we don't have to be concerned about what we're going to be or how life is going to express itself, because it simply expresses itself in the way that apple trees apple and the seasons change and the rivers flow Everything will take care of itself the way the movement of nature takes care of itself. And we don't have to see it as a bleak situation, because it's always expressing, along with the sorrows, it's expressing joys. Along with the confusions, it's expressing clarity. Along with the sadness, it's expressing happiness. Along with the anxieties, it's also expressing a confidence, a strength to go through life. And the fact that we're not having absolute control over any of this simply leaves us with a journey of exploration and a voyage of discovery. Now, flat out, we don't really know what this is. But it's also the case that we don't really know what its next apparent expression is going to be. And it could be something wonderful. Right now, it's true that it might feel wonderful, and that its next expression might not be so wonderful, but it's also the case that in the moments that it feels terrible, a moment later, it might feel wonderful. So it becomes a fascinating and rich dance of something that can never be understood. And it's filled with surprises. It will present both happy and sad, joy and sorrow, clarity and confusion, confidence and anxiety. That's its natural expression. But that's not a bleak situation. That's not a hopeless situation. Because in that, there are these joys, there are these pleasures, there are these loves. And all of that has an intrinsic, meaningful aspect to it. It's not a hopeless situation. Now, many people have, over the years, attempted to point to this richness of life, this intriguing parade of ever-shifting appearances. So, just to end this particular consideration, I want to read a paragraph from the novel Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse. And it's probably the first time in Western literature that what we might call the awakened sensibility was first expressed. And this paragraph is as follows. Siddhartha listened. He was now all listener, completely one with listening, completely empty, completely receptive. He felt now that he had completed his learning of how to listen. He had often heard all these things before, these many voices in the river, but today he heard it in a new way. Now he no longer distinguished the many voices, the happy from the grieving, the childlike from the manly. They were all part of each other, longing laments, the laughter of the wise, cries of anger, and the moans of the dying. All were one, all were interwoven and linked, intertwined in a thousand ways, and everything together, all the voices, all the goals, all the striving, all the suffering, all the pleasure, everything together was the river of what is, the music of life. And when Siddhartha listened attentively to the thousandfold song of the river, when he did not fasten on the suffering or the laughing, when he did not attach his mind to any one voice and become involved in it with his ego, when he listened to all of them, the whole, when he perceived the unity, then the great song of a thousand voices formed one single word, perfection. And with that, I'll be talking to you next month. Maybe.